Welcome to Walk the Talk, a private podcast production with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. Chief Inspector Jackie Hurst is an operations manager and force incident commander within the Lancashire Constabulary. 27 years ago, she joined an organisation where female officers wore skirts and men wore the trousers, both operationally and metaphorically. A lot has happened to Jackie and that organisation she joined all those years ago. Born and bred in Lytham, a family firmly rooted in Liverpool, Jackie wanted to be a police officer from the age of 13. Her parents rather sensibly persuaded her to go into further education on leaving school, and she became the first person in her family to go to university. Jackie's first posting was at the south end of Blackpool, which she described as a baptism of fire, armed only with a police-issue handbag and handcuffs, a far cry from today's modern uniform. Jackie performed a variety of roles and started to gain traction on the promotion ladder. However, that was about to come to an abrupt end when Jackie received the terrible news that her husband was diagnosed with terminal cancer. 15 months later, he lost his fight for life. Jackie described her life during that time as a blur, but several months later, she decided to return to work, taking up a management post at Lancaster. After several more months and encouragement from her own boss, she took up an operational command role and in 2014 was promoted to Chief Inspector. Jackie's recently been elected chair of the Women's Network, known as Inspire Women in Policing. Those that know Jackie will say she genuinely cares about her staff. So who better to spend the next half hour exploring the role of women in policing, sexism, and that awkward subject, women's things. I'm delighted to say she joins me now. A few years ago, a book was published called Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus about communication and relationships. Apart from the obvious comparisons, are men and women really that different? Or is it more down to personality, where in a sense, everybody is different?
Well, I think the quote where you say, in a sense, everyone is different is correct. I can't argue with that. I do think, apart from the obvious physical differences between men and women, we are different. You know, I think from my own personal experience, I've recognised that in the 27 years of policing experience I've had. And also been quite a lot of recognised study, you know, in terms of the study of men and women, how they think, how they solve problems. And yes, we absolutely are different. I think the issues we often have is failing to recognise those differences within, especially within a working environment, and probably more importantly, within personal relationships. So for me, especially in my role as chair of Inspire, it's about how we can work together to A, recognise differences, B, accept and acknowledge them, and look for ways of how that can lead to productive working relationships.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, for years we've talked about equality across the board, but is it more equity than equality these days?
For me, I believe firmly in people being treated as individuals and being treated according to need. It's an incredibly difficult, almost impossible task to treat people the same or equally. For me, it's about personal need. And as an organisation, I think we're still on a learning curve with that. You know, we sometimes get things spot on right in how we deal and manage people, and sometimes we don't. My hope and wish is that as an organisation, we learn from it. I know personally, I've not always got things right when I've managed situations and managed people. However, I do think I can and do have the ability to learn from it, albeit sometimes it can be a painful learning experience. So yeah, for me, it's about treating people according to their need. And that can often be perceived as different. Well, factually, it can be different in terms of treating people according to need. And I appreciate sometimes that can come across as an inequity in terms of how that person or individual is treated, managed, etc.
Well, yeah, I mean, it all goes down, and certainly a few years ago, this positive bias, whatever you want to call about it, there was all sorts of controversies about that at the time, wasn't there?
There was, and, you know, even, for example, even today, that I think there's a lot of misconception and misunderstanding around the legislation around positive action versus positive discrimination. Positive discrimination is illegal. Positive action, in particular where you have a genuine occupational qualification, and that means basically you have a certain underrepresentation within a certain group, within the workplace, for example, that's when legally you are allowed or enabled to facilitate some support, some coaching, whether it's physical, practical, peer-to-peer, in terms of gaining a more equitable representation within that group of people.
Well, you already mentioned the fact that you've become the chair of the Women's Network. So what is it? Why is it necessary? And what are its key aims?
Well, the Women's Network was first launched in May 2005. And on its 10th anniversary, it was rebranded as Inspire Women in Policing, often sort of shortened to Inspire. I mean, the network was first established, Dave, to encourage more women to be involved in the constabulary's decision-making process, and also to develop a network of professional and social contacts between women at local, national, and hopefully international level. So that's the broad sort of aim of Inspire. Currently, our aims involve providing encouragement, mentoring and coaching to support career development, and hopefully to inspire women to achieve full potential within the workplace. It's also to create opportunities about sharing experiences with other women in the constabulary, and with that, other women and their families. Because for me, in my role as chair, I want to provide a real focus for women and their families. For every individual in the organisation, whether you are a woman or in a relationship with a woman in the organisation, there will be some kind of shared experiences around certain issues and themes. We also want to raise awareness and provide information and advice on a range of gender-specific issues. We want to establish a forum that aims to influence constabulary policies and procedures. So that may be around certain issues such as maternity, paternity, IVF, fertility treatment, flexible working, and again that's focused on women and their families. We also want to strive for proportionate representation in specialist posts, which is an age-old challenge, and supervisory and management roles. We want to provide opportunities for personal and professional development to all staff, and in particular with regard to gender issues, and to offer all members of staff the opportunity to develop an insight into issues which affect women and their families. Now, I've sort of reeled off there the aims. Now, those aims have been with us for about 10 years. Interestingly, we're going to revisit them. We formed at the recent AGM in July. We had a fantastic attendance. DCC Gambling attended as well to support the cause and to help us network and spread really the ethos of Inspire. The exec committee was formed because one of our aims was to get a better representation on the exec committee, which would include police staff and also male representation, which we've now been able to achieve. We meet for the first time as our first exec committee in September, where we're actually going to review these aims in light of the feedback we received at the AGM. We conducted an exercise. We asked the audience, so about 70 people there, all ranks and roles. We asked them, what do you want Inspire to do for you? So we've now collated that information and we need to analyse it in further detail. But some of the headlines, if I can share with you.
I was going to ask what some of the key themes would be.
Yeah, some of the key themes. And there is overlap in terms of the current aims that we've had for over 10 years. Some of the feedback we've had has been around mentoring. People want a structured and easily accessible mentoring programme. You know, we know that there are pockets of excellent mentoring within the constabulary, some on a formal, some on a less formal basis. We've been asked to, you know, how can we enhance and embrace police staff role models? People want to know more about Inspire Network per se, how we communicate, raise awareness and understanding of how we can be accessed, what support we can give staff in terms of welfare, you know, in terms of grievance management, in terms of performance. We've also been given headlines around development progression, you know, retention of female staff, also as well around police staff PIP accreditation. So there's absolutely a real rich source of data here for us that we need to dig around in when we first meet for our exec. Yes. We've got a refreshed committee. We're all really keen to work together. One of our aims is to, we've managed to recruit, so to speak, very informally at the AGM, around 30 people who have offered to be representatives in division. With that, we would like to try and encourage more of our male colleagues to get involved. Because for me, I go back to what I said earlier, this is about women and their families.
Well, that's interesting because we're going to talk about that a little bit later as well. So you've been a police officer now for well over 20 years and performed a variety of roles at varying ranks. You must have seen sexism firsthand and perhaps even been a victim of it yourself. So how does that make you feel, and how exactly can it be damaging not only to you but the organisation as a whole?
Okay, well, thanks first of all for reminding me I've been a cop for over 20 years. Yes,
and I think it's a bit longer than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's well over 20 years. Have I seen sexism firsthand? That's a really difficult question to answer. For me, individually, I have been a victim of sexism. And we're talking, I want to put this into context, we're talking 26 years ago, when I first started as a 21-year-old PC at Blackpool South, and that sexism was absolutely peer-to-peer. That has been my main experience of sexism. And I honestly believe that it was not particularly intentional. It was the culture at the time, born out of ignorance, born out of what I have now learnt from 26 years of life. And being a cop and being a supervisor and a manager and a leader. So, and that sexism was, I guess you could have explained it as banter. Sometimes there was, you know, it might have been, for example, a colleague patting me on the bottom. Right. Don't get me wrong, they were given short shrift to never do it again, because I was a confident, and I am a confident individual who is able to hold my corner. However, I recognise there may have been other female colleagues, now I didn't even give it a thought at the time, that may have been experiencing this but didn't feel as though they had the voice or the confidence to say. That was my initial experience. Yeah. And part of that as a young, naive officer was, this is about being accepted and about being belonging to the team.
You're almost making a sacrifice to sacrificing, you know, your own feelings and that behaviour to, so you could fit in.
Absolutely. And whilst I was very confident in saying don't ever do that again, you know, I was very conscious that potentially standing up for myself could have alienated me from the rest of my team. Now, you know, when all was said and done, I worked with a fabulous team, a great sergeant, and I had a blast. You know, Blackpool South in the early 90s, crazy place, but what a brilliant place to work and cut your teeth as a cop. Sexism in terms of, you know, my experience thereafter, it's very difficult to determine. I don't believe for one minute that Lancashire Constabulary is a sexist organisation. Quite the opposite. There is significant awareness, effort, commitment to strive to be an inclusive organisation. That's not without its challenges. You know, we're a big outfit. I think sexism, if you were looking at it today, in my personal view and from my experiences, it's probably more hidden and potentially born out of lack of awareness, knowledge and understanding. For example, we often hear from our members, from female colleagues, that they often feel begrudged by the fact that they are receiving, obviously, maternity rights and, you know, issues around pregnancy to facilitate appointments, etc. And they often feel as though that their male colleagues think they're given privileges, where actually it's their legal right and it's all very well recognised and documented in constabulary policy. I think it highlights potentially that some people may not understand the implications of maternity and pregnancy on that individual and their baby. However, that said, I do think we've made significant strides positively in that direction, you know, in terms of, for me, it's around education. It would be interesting to get some feedback from our male colleagues about their perspective on that in terms of when their partner may be feeling begrudged by other male colleagues, which they see as a privilege rather than actually, this is the not just the legal right of an individual, but it's the right thing to do.
And I think sexism sometimes is well meant, and what I mean by that is that seeing you get older guys that will say a comment where they would see it as a compliment, but perhaps in the modern age we would see it as perhaps something a little different.
Absolutely, and I think that again is very much down to individual perception, experience, how people think, and quite often it's, as you say, it's well intended. I don't think there is any significant amount of sexism, if you want to call it, within the workplace, which is actually intentional. I think that is extremely rare.
Right, as we all get older, all women at some point will encounter the menopause. Believe it or not, there will be guys listening to this who won't have a clue what that means. Perhaps worryingly, some of them will be supervisors and senior leaders. So what is the menopause and what are the effects?
Right, the menopause is not a dirty word. I'd like to clarify that. Yes, I think we are on a learning curve as an organisation around our awareness with the menopause. The menopause is, the factual description is, it's when a woman's reproductive system comes to an end. So a woman can no longer reproduce. Most people, or many people within our organisation, are experiencing what's called the perimenopause, which is where you get most of the symptoms associated with the menopause bearing out whilst your body is adjusting itself to end its reproductive life, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, along with that, there are over, I don't know whether you're aware, you probably are because you are a knowledgeable man, there are over 30 recognised symptoms associated with the menopause, and most of those come in the perimenopausal state. Now, generally speaking, and I'm no expert on this, I can only talk from experience as I am one of those people who are perimenopausal, and also talking to colleagues and friends who were sharing those experiences. The symptoms can be really widely ranging from headaches, from insomnia, from restlessness, from sort of certain bodily parts being really sore, from irritability, from pain, from joint pain. There's a whole host, and these are medically recognised symptoms. I think the gap which we organisationally would like to work on is to raise awareness, because for some people those symptoms can be quite extreme. For most people, I think they are able to cope with them and manage them. Personally, what I find really difficult is fatigue. If I have, sometimes I will have a period where I sleep really bad, a time, you know, over a few weeks, and I get chronic fatigue. And I find that particularly hard when it comes to concentrating, memory recall, you know, so I've experienced all that, as have my colleagues. But for some people, that can be very extreme, and they could potentially be on the border of coping and not coping. That's when supervisors, colleagues, peers would be able to offer some support or some flexibility. And we are not talking necessarily about going on restricted duties. It's just about making some balanced, reasonable adjustments for that individual so that they are able to manage the symptoms accordingly. As I say, I honestly believe that most women crack on with it and get on with it. And to be fair, I think that's what's been happening for many years, because it's not been a subject that's even been talked about. No. But we are, as an organisation, we are absolutely getting there with those conversations, because factually our workforce is ageing. Mm. There are many more mature women in their sort of 40 plus who are still frontline officers doing a cracking job, and actually very effectively managing their own perimenopausal symptoms. But occasionally, one or two of us might just need a bit of slack cutting, mm. you know?
And of course, add on to that all the pressures of being a police officer on top of all that. And obviously, you're a force incident commander yourself and having to make sometimes potentially life and death decisions. And if you're fatigued, under the weather, whatever you want to call it, then, you know, there's factors at play there, isn't there?
Absolutely. And the starting point is for an individual to be able to just have a conversation, mm. maybe with a peer. I mean, for some people, having that conversation with their line manager, they've said to me, there's no way I could talk to them about that. They'd squirm. They wouldn't be interested. They wouldn't get it. And I think, gosh, that's a real challenge for us, to be able to, A, give people who are experiencing the symptoms, perhaps to an extreme situation where they might need a bit of support, through to their supervisors. We also need to support them in terms of raising that awareness. So with that, we do have a menopause action group within the organisation, which is led by Detective Chief Superintendent Sue Clark. It's in its early stages. We're also doing some research and working with colleagues in Cumbria and across the region in terms of the network, just to share our experiences organisationally and also to learn from each other.
Well, it's interesting you mention about partners, because for women in a relationship, the menopause doesn't just only affect them, but as you say, their partners, perhaps in particular male partners, who some have described it as a form of bereavement. And indeed, I know of cases where it's proved too much, resulting in a failed relationship or marriage. So this is another facet that I suspect the organisation has to consider.
Absolutely. And, you know, I made reference, I think, earlier to the fact this is not just about women themselves or their supervisors perhaps managing a particular issue around that. The bigger picture is the family, the impact on the family, the impact on husband or female partner. So I think there is some organisational learning to be had from that. I feel very sad when I hear, you know, you say that for some men and perhaps women partners as well, it's been described as a form of bereavement. It would sadden me more to learn that if partners of those women who are experiencing those extreme symptoms mm. are not able to share that with either peers, at least.
Yeah. I think from a you know, from a male point of view, I think it's the quality of the relationship, perhaps.
Sure, but for me, it gets back to starting the conversation, because as an organisation, if we are able to start having these conversations, I am sure, well, first of all, the conversation starts, and what we have to hopefully anticipate is some level of trust that staff will put in, both individuals and organisation, to be able to share those experiences and have a response which is compassionate and supportive.
I think in all these interviews I've done, that is a very common theme that runs through all of them, is just talking to each other peer-to-peer, not necessarily seeing a counsellor or a trained professional. And sometimes it's good to speak to somebody that's actually been there themselves and sort of can sort of say, yeah, I know what you mean.
Absolutely. I think empathy is one of the most powerful emotions, experiences anybody can experience. And when you are able to look somebody in the eye and say, look, whilst my experience might be slightly different to you, I can see or feel the parallels of emotion that you are experiencing, that is a really powerful thing. And it builds trust and it builds relationships and it builds our understanding of each other in terms of differences. Because this is what I alluded to before, you know, you asked me the question about men and women being different. Well, absolutely. You know, we approach problem solving in different ways. We consider how we think about things in different ways. And for me, that creates a really interesting dynamic and balance. And for me, there can only be a positive way to that in terms of embracing and accepting those differences. What we often fail to do is recognise those and just get really impatient with each other.
Now, you very kindly describe me as a knowledgeable man. I think I'm fairly enlightened. But, I mean, we're talking about this, but, you know, even I'm not sitting entirely comfortably sitting here discussing the menopause with you. Why do you think it is a taboo subject?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm asking myself that now. Why is it so taboo? I really don't know, because for me, individually, I feel really comfortable talking about it, but I can only speak for me. I know many of my colleagues who, there's almost a shame around it. You know, I think perhaps some of my colleagues who are in the same place as me with symptoms, dependent upon relationships with peers and supervisors, maybe they feel as though they might be ridiculed. They may feel as though it's seen as a weakness. And again, for me, there's parallels here around where we were several years ago around mental health. Boy, have we made progress with conversations around mental health. The organisation has made massive progress around that because, in fairness, that's a very, it can be quite widespread and it affects absolutely everybody. The menopause fact does not affect everybody, but it still will affect a wide variety of people within the organisation. And again, it's about women and their families. For example, in November last year, the network, we ran a CPD event where Dee Collins, the Chief Constable of West Yorkshire Police, it was actually the day she found out she'd been promoted to Chief, she came and her input to the audience was all about the ageing workforce and the menopause. And that was great to hear that from a chief officer. And for me, that's where we need, and we do have the support from the chief officer team around those conversations beginning, but it needs to be shared right across the organisation.
So we're coming towards the end of this interview now. So my final question to you, Jackie, is, was there a particular moment when you learnt something more about yourself than at any other time in your life?
Oh gosh. Wow, what a belter question that is. Yes. Well, you probably know what I'm going to say. You'll have to edit that bit out.
Go on.
Yeah, the time when I learnt most about myself in my life was through bereavement. Well, where do I start with that? Happily married to Daryl for 14 years, been with him for over 20 years. It's a while ago now, back in November 2010, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. We knew from the outset that his illness was terminal and he had only a limited amount of time to live. Most patients with that diagnosis are expected to survive between 6 weeks and 3 months. Daryl was amazing and he survived for 15 months. I'll never forget him saying, "I'm not going to accept this as an instant death sentence." He had an incredibly difficult illness, passed away in February 2012, at the time when I'd still decided to do my chief inspector's board. I've learned from that was a coping mechanism, and the organisation were incredibly supportive. I can't put into words really how supportive the organisation were. They were absolutely fantastic with me. And I felt kindness, love, support from all corners of the organisation. What I learned about myself from that, because following Daryl's death in February 2012, 7 weeks later, my father died. And then 3 weeks after that, my uncle died, and that was my mum's brother. So she'd lost her son-in-law, her husband and her brother within 3 months, and she was seeing a daughter in absolute devastation, whose world had been torn apart by death. What I learned from that experience was I am incredibly resilient. It doesn't mean to say I'm not emotional. I'm hugely emotional. But what it taught me in life, and I know this sounds a little bit sort of trite, but for me, I appreciate every single day that I wake up and get out of bed. And yes, for me, I know I'm a tough old boot. I don't think there's anything in life that would faze me now. That's not to say I still don't get apprehensive, nervous, scared, doubtful. You know, sometimes I feel, oh, you know, will I be able to do this? But actually, there's nothing in life I don't believe would ever faze me now. What it's also taught me, Dave, in particular in the workplace, I really feel as though from all my experience with death, I've become far more tolerant and empathetic when people come to me with problems. Now, for a short time in the early stages of bereavement, I would have found that very difficult to tolerate because it's all about perspective for me. I believe there's been times I've been able to help people see things from an alternate perspective because for me, and people who know me at work know I have a bit of a thing about the cake of perspective. My analogy of that is, in my life, I was force-fed the cake. I didn't have a choice. It happened. I swallowed the cake whole. But I believe it's enabled me to have a really balanced perspective on life in terms of, there's a promise I made to my husband. He asked me, please, I want you to live life for the both of us. And I've had to make some very deliberate choices in the last few years. Mm. One of those deliberate choices was, girl, you've got to live. Choose to live. And that comes with time. And I wouldn't have got there without the support of my amazing family and my brilliant friends who at times would almost drag me out of bed. Mm. Come on, you're coming. And who were hugely kind and respectful. But I know I can bring that into the workplace now. And I've already had conversations with people who are experiencing loved ones with serious illnesses who want to share and talk. And I honestly believe I'm able to listen. I can never fix it. You never can. But I think I've been able to support people, be a listening ear, be able to say, I know what's going on for you. What I can say is that it will get better. You might not believe that now or hear that now, but it will get better. So I think I've been able to my approach has been with a little bit more humility.
Well, you're a good person. We should all take a leaf out of your book. Jackie Hurst, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Dave.